Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
I'm Laura Stanley, host of Inside School Food. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. Today is Tuesday, March 31st, 2015. We'll be talking about beer education and fine dining in New York City. We've got some great familiar faces here. Augie Carton from Carton Brewing. Hello. John LaPolia from Bitter and Esther's. Hi. And Alex Pfaffenbach from the Nomad Restaurant.
Good afternoon.
Beer Sessions Radio is brought to you by Union Beer Distributors, suppliers of world-class ales and lagers. And we'll be tweeting live today at beer_sessions. Tweet your questions to Maggie. One quick note. I know some listeners as far as England, like Garen, Becker, you guys have inquired. There was a big fire in the East Village, and Jimmy's Number 43 is right in the epicenter. We are still closed. We're waiting on the city to reopen. As far as we know, the building's fine, but right now we are currently closed. So fingers crossed, and check out our gift certificate link, jimmysnumber43.com/store/, and send us some love. All right? So here we are back on Heritage Radio Network. We've been talking about some cool things for a while. Augie's been on. We talked about his duck and decoy at the 11 Madison Park, which is kind of like fine dining and beer. And from that, I think Maggie was inspired and brought Alex and some of the Nomad restaurant crew to John's Bitter and Esther's to do some home brewing. Yep. So why don't you guys tell us like how that came together and what the experience was like.
So Maggie's been helping me do education at the Nomad for quite a while, probably about 9 months now, and it's been incredible. And she had this idea that, you know, we wanted to teach about beer through the actual process of making it itself. So she told me about Bitter and Esther's and said we got to get down there and meet with John, and talked it over, and we brought a crew of 15-16 yeah. in yeah. and made a beer with them for our holiday party. It was awesome.
Yeah, brown ale, right? With yeah. cranberries.
yeah. Cranberries and kefir lime leaf.
Yeah, that's right. It had kefir lime. I forgot about that. Yeah. That beer was delicious.
It was yeah. really good. It actually came out really good.
Yeah, it came out fantastic.
It was a blast. So we brought it up to the staff that we were going to do this education opportunity off-site, and it's usually typically pretty difficult to get anyone to attend an educational opportunity that's not at the Nomad. So we had a meeting before, discussed some potential beers that we were going to make, and threw it out there to see what people wanted to name it, and then we followed up and went to Bitter and Esther's and brewed.
Yep.
And we had a good turnout, like 15 to 20 people. And
all the way in Brooklyn, too.
All was, the yeah, way.
They all came all out to Brooklyn. That was the hard part.
But, so, John, when you do these, you're doing classes all the time, uh-huh. you know, what are some of the things that you're emphasizing with newbies?
Well, this is specific. They really wanted to have education as far as the servers knowing more about beer styles. And they wanted to brew a beer as well. So we're brew on premises, which means that you can come and brew beer at the store. And so I actually set it up so that there was tasting. I got several different styles of commercial beers. And I spoke to them about why these beers tasted the way they did, what ingredients actually influenced them. I talked about the malt, I talked about the hops, talked about the different yeasts. I had a Belgian style so they can tell, you know, how yeast can really affect a beer. And during the whole thing, we brewed a beer at the same time. Maggie came early and helped me. She's a great brewing partner. And then the rest of the staff came a little bit later towards the end because it was a good 4.5 hour process, and they didn't want to be there the whole time.
You know, through the notes on Alex from the Nomad, and these are like 11 Madison Park, the Nomad restaurant. These are like very like fine dining,
yeah,
fancy places.
Big time.
But Maggie's notes today, Alan Pfaffenbach, Maggie's boss, Nomad dining room manager, and supports Maggie in whatever endeavor she may think of at the Nomad.
Which I appreciate.
So what is it about our Maggie?
That's what I try to do. I think it's cool how she's combined what she's studying at NYU and applying it to how we source food and how we handle local breweries and everything at the Nomad. And she's sort of combining the two, and she's really passionate about it, and she wants to teach everyone what she's learning and what she's discovered, which I think is amazing.
I think it's a great idea, especially for beer servers or anyone that's in the beer industry. The beer is changing so much. There's so many local breweries, and there's so many different ingredients being used in different styles. And then the server is like, I don't know, you know. It's nothing wrong with them. It's just it's so much happening that some sort of education is important, not just for the people serving, but also for the people drinking. I think that we're going to find that we need a lot more beer education for people's palates to get used to and to understand what they're doing. So we do a lot of that at the store.
Augie, as a brewer, you know, you're doing a lot of dinners and events.
True. Yeah. I do. What I'm most excited about in education, and when I talk to the I guess somewhere in the process is going to be the end. There's got to be a term in the business for what restaurants are. But what I like is more and more people taking proper service seriously. Like you can always draw the lines between when America came around to dining versus eating, when America came around to wine beyond, you know, red or white, then it turned into grapes, then it turned into regions. And the same's going on with craft beer. But there was a time where white was served cold and red wasn't. And then you learn that there were wines that thrived at 30, at 40, at 50, at 60, at 70. And I'm seeing that happen. Terst is a great example here. I know you guys take your temperatures pretty seriously. I know the Cicerone, Cicerone program pays a lot of attention to service as well. And for me, that's where I'm seeing, you know, fine dining or finer dining when they dip their hands in a craft beer ticket. These are the people that aren't into the, I've got 100 taps, I'm sure 30 are fresh approach. But people that took the I've got 12 well curated beers.
That's a third might be fresh.
But yeah. But you know, let's face it, some are cool, right? Yeah. There's some that are fun to be. Oh my God, we've had that on for 2 years now.
Right.
But largely you want fresher beer, and that's what I like to see from that group, the fine dining group, when they do delve. Especially, I remember getting an email, you know, the monthly email or quarterly email when EMP announced a big beer program. And I had other restaurateurs around me in New Jersey going, what are they doing? It's, you know, that's not fine dining. I was like, it is when you're there. And that respect for that part of beer is what I think intrigues me most as a beer maker. Because, you know, let's face it, none of my beers taste good at 38. I make all my beers largely for their aromatic impact more than their flavor impact. So you're not really getting aromas off my beers when they come out of your standard fridge. So a place that knows that and cares about that is who I want serving my beers.
So temperature is important. What are you guys doing for a beer program, Alex? I mean, I've had cocktails at your place. I've been to a beer class. I'm sure you sell a lot of wine. You know, why are you here talking about beer from the Nomad?
So coming up against, or not coming up against, but being in support of a world-class beer program, a world-class wine program and a world-class cocktail program, a bar program that won outstanding bar program from James Beard this year.
Leo
Robichek. The idea is that the entire beverage menu is going to make sense. So you can't have world-class cocktails and world-class wine without world-class beer. And now beer's never going to make the most money. It's, you know, it's not going to satisfy the highest rollers. But if you're serving, you know, some of the best beers in the world, it's the beverage menu makes sense. It needs to make sense from front to back. If you don't have world-class beer, then it takes away from the provenance of the beverage menu as the whole.
I think the last time you were on, we had Yeppe from Evil Twin, and you guys made a beer together.
Mm-hmm.
What beer was that?
We made the Nomad Vice with him. So the first beer guy at the Nomad when we opened made a beer with him called the Nomad Vit, and it was just a Belgian-style whipped beer in a 22-ounce bottle. It was pretty good. And we wanted to follow that with something that was more in the style of beer that I like to drink and probably more in the style of beer that would fit our food. So something light and crisp with a little bit of acidity to it to match our food. And we did a Berliner Weiss in a can, and it was pretty cool. So it's light, it's citric, matches a lot of the acidity in our food, and we built a custom service piece with Black Point Woodworking in Jersey, a wooden board that was designed to hold the can of beer along with two glass decanters on either side holding a syrup. So we make a raspberry syrup and a...
Woodruff?
Yeah.
What do you charge?
No,
for? I'm trying to get into this.
A basil fennel syrup.
Oh, basil fennel.
You guys are representing fine dining, but I want to break into that a little bit. So what do you charge for that?
So it's $10 for the can of beer along with the two homemade syrups. Sort of like a nod to traditional Berliner Weisses of old.
And that's what I love about beer, is that you can go super hardcore, super good quality, and not really, you know, you're not going to do $100. You know, it's $10.
Well, is the gig you assemble it a la...
Yeah. Yeah.
A la Berlin at your own table.
Absolutely. So one of the things that when we were trying to figure this out, Yebe was like, you know, you go to Berlin, you order Berliner Weiss, and it comes with the syrup already in it, packaged. Yeah. And we wanted to go back to the traditional way of giving them the option of, do you want an herbal syrup or do you want a raspberry syrup or a sweet fruit syrup?
Do you guys do that service at both restaurants, Nomad mm-hmm. and Nomad Bar?
Yes.
Right on.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Hey, Augie, what are we drinking here, by the way? It's delicious.
Oh, amazing. This is Hot Bun. So I know Jimmy was having a hard week. I figured the best I could do for him was bring the last three things out of tank so it'd be as fresh as possible. I brought three beers, all three literally the last things we took out. This is Hot Pun. This is just a pretty straightforward pale, but I'm in love with the kind of new American hops. So it's a whole bunch of experimentals that don't have names yet, some Mosaic. And we actually use a yeast people tend to hate as kind of a show-off move.
What yeast is that?
It's Ringwood.
So people do hate it. So yeah, diacetyl, they always say.
Yeah, well, yeah. No diacetyl here, but all those fruity esters, if you treat it right. So those fruits build onto the fruits that are in the hops, and it's just meant to be fruity pale. We do it about 6 months a year, starting in April, gets you through summer, and then we switch over to a rye pale. The next one up, I thought, because you guys are being all cookie today, I would do a cookie beer. This is a collaboration we did.
These are my buddies.
That's right.
That's why we do it.
We did a collaboration with Against the Grain out in Kentucky, their smokehouse. And in a very drunken conversation with those guys one day, they explained to me that when they want to add a wrinkle to their beer, they'll smoke an ingredient, and that they had smoked hops, and they had smoked malts, really? And they had smoked salt for a goza, and they had smoked... And I had made the base for this beer for our anniversary. It's a double version of our boat beer, and we changed the hops to Jade and to Pacific Jade and a blend pellet called Zythos. And it ended up the fruity citric nature of boat beer became pineapple. And I liked it. I thought it was cool. It was just in my head, but it kind of did what it was supposed to do, so no reason to do it again. Then I was having the discussion with the guys from Against the Grain, and they said they smoke anything. I was like, could you smoke pineapples? So they said, yes. That started a project where we made a double boat called SS Kentucky with smoked... We actually smoked the malts on peach wood on their cold smoker, and we roasted the pineapples directly on the wood.
Yeah, I can taste the smoke. Yeah. It's really nice.
So yeah, like I said, it's meant to be just... It's like all our beers, right? It's just a nudge in the direction. It was already pineapple-y.
And this is great, you know, because this is kind of like the kind of beers I want to drink in fine dining fancy places. Let's go back. So, Alex, to me, the Nomad has always seemed like kind of imposing, and I would be afraid to just walk in. Is that the case? And also, is the Nomad bar more welcoming?
So it's tough to say, because when you walk in, it's a really dark lobby, and then you have this really big, open, noisy room, and then on the left, it's this like really gilded, almost nice, fancy dining room, and it can be pretty intimidating. But what I like to think about how our service is: the minute you sit down at a table, you're greeted by this really friendly person, and they're really, really ready to guide you through the massive tomes of beverage menus that you get when you sit down, because we're a very beverage-focused restaurant. So I think that, like, the people...
So we should go there afterwards, right?
Yeah, right? You guys want to go there tonight?
Who's buying?
I would openly say that I've never left there not deep in my cups.
It's all about the
what's
people.
What's that expression on
deep in my cups?
I like that. Cheers to that one. I bet that's going to be a new beer that you'll make soon too.
Deep in your cups.
It's coming.
There's no way Battle lets me do that.
But anyway, so I walked in the bar once, and your hostess greeted me, and next thing you know, I was sitting at the bar with my two. Actually, the brewers from Big Alice were with me, and we had a great time. We sent out a couple of different cocktails, and it was kind of boisterous. It wasn't what I expected, but it was great.
You thought more hoity-toity?
I just don't know, and I want to know more about, you know, that ethos. But also, like, who works here? Like, how did you start running? You're a manager for a very fine dining bar and restaurant. How did you get that job?
So, well, it's...
Because there's people that want to come to New York City and take your job, you know?
I was... So I graduated from college, and my friends were opening this restaurant upstate New York in Binghamton, where I went to school, and... They were totally doing it wrong, and I had no idea what I was doing. I'd been a busboy when I was like 15, served and done everything in the restaurant, and my friends were totally tanking this restaurant that I thought would be really cool. So I jumped in and was going to help them for a summer. I ended up being a partner for 3 years and or 2.5 years, and then I moved to New York and worked for Drew Neaport at Tribeca Grill, and their bar manager left, and I had no experience. So like, you should do that.
When was that?
2011.
Oh, I would have had
2011, 2012.
That wine list was awesome.
Well, so the wine there
is... going to Tribeca Grill tonight.
The wine list there is insane.
There's a lot of great places in New York City. Yeah, but once he started shipping it to Cortona, it quickly changed. But when it was all still held at Tribeca, you could find some great...
Well, wine at Myriad is owned by David Gordon there, and then the bar, liquor, beer is its own entity, and that's sort of not an afterthought, but not the most important thing. So they gave me the liquor cocktail menu and beer menu, and the wine was sort of owned by the wine department, which was totally separate.
So you could explore the dance space without much adult supervision.
Yeah, pretty much. It was a lot of fun. I made a lot of cocktails, but the biggest influence on me was the head sommelier at the time, Steve Morgan, who ended up being sommelier at Alinea for a while, and now he just opened a restaurant in Chicago.
After the show, we go over to the Nomad Bar. What beer on draft should I drink tonight?
Firestone Pivo.
Nice, man. That's a good one. All right. Hey, we're going to take a short break. We're back in a few minutes. We're talking fine dining and beer on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Born from discord and harmonies, raised by the rays of the falling sun.
And this is Daphne and Apollo by Odetta Hartman on Beer Sessions.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, come out to Roberta's in Bushwick, and you can hang out. It's more than pizza out here, but there's also good beer and cocktails, and it's a great menu. But we got a very great group here tonight. Alex from the Nomad, John from Bitters and Esters, and Augie from Carton Brewing. Hello. This is kind of like our brain trust of beer here. You know, we got service, educator, and brewer. But what ties you guys together is you're not afraid to go deep and talk about beer. And Augie in particular. Let's go back. We're talking about fine dining. Duck and Decoy, 11 Madison Park. You're like the atypical brewer.
Well, yeah. I kind of approach everything from the dissection of a flavor. So there's commonality to all flavor. I was talking to somebody recently about how much fun it would be to put a smoked wort into an already sour barrel once the Brett was having its way with it, oxygenated a little, throw some dill in there, and essentially what you'd have put together is all the flavors of a corned beef and pickle from down on Lower East Side.
What beer is that?
We haven't made it yet. It's just one.
It will happen. But
let's just read from your can. Hold on. It says SS Kentucky Imperial India Pale Ale with smoked pineapple, and that's what we're drinking. And yep. I'm on with, for me, it's always the test of do I like the beer. I'm on my second, and I will be on my third. So thanks for bringing that in.
My pleasure.
I like the smoked pineapple. Back in high school, I used to smoke banana peels. I don't know if anyone ever did that.
That's only Bugs.
Let's jump back. So Alex from Nomad, we're talking about him, how he got started. You know, I can tell he's a serious beverage guy. And but John at Bitters and Esters. So you hosted the kind of the fine dining staff from his restaurant.
You know,
and what was it like? I mean, what were these? Were they?
The first thing I noticed is they were all very good looking. I was surrounded by really good looking people.
Because Maggie was there.
Because Maggie was there. Yeah, Maggie was the best looking of the bunch. But yeah, that was cool. They were all really fun. They all really wanted to learn. And so, you know, the worst thing is teaching to people who don't give a poop. So they all cared, and I like that about them. They were really, really a lot of fun.
Alex, what other type of staff training? Because like, a lot of people don't realize what it takes to work in a fine dining restaurant. What other staff trainings do you have? Because obviously your staff, at least for – they must want to learn, or you require them to learn, right?
Well, we try to stay away from required classes, but there's something almost – every day, a couple times a week. Yesterday, they had Steve Olson in to do a Del Maguey Mezcal tasting, and he tasted through everything in the line. And then last week, Alan Katz from New York Distilling came in and they distilled gin in the bar. with a group of staff, which was crazy to
me. That's really cool.
Yeah, our bar manager, Chris Louder, is really, really into education. He's been bringing in all kinds of liquor professionals lately. So, you know, it's something that we try to do with beer as well, where we had Yebe come in and do a talk, and the guys from Two Roads, and then Garrett came in from Brooklyn Brewery and did a talk about the pairing of the La Poulet Brooklyn Brewery beer that we make with them for our chicken pairing. And we
Has everybody had the chicken?
You gotta have the chicken.
When you go there tonight, when you go tonight, get the chicken.
That's good.
Chicken is. So you've had 11 Madison's duck with me.
Yes.
Chicken is Nomad's duck. It's unbelievable. It's the dish.
I meant the chicken. So what
I was there. So you're talking about service, right? So I never want to be, you know, I never want to be too dismissive of everything. But New York is what it is, and in that part of town, at most of the restaurants, you're not. Everybody thinks it's going to be crazy expensive because it's so good. But the difference in what you pay at that restaurant versus the one across the street, it's not that big a spread depending on how you handle it. It's just the neighborhoods have their rates. So for me, if you're gonna burn money on a dinner check in New York, you got to go to the place that gives you the most back for those dollars spent. And I'm obviously very close with these guys and these programs, and then by extension, the Danny Meyer Group is in that same area. In that area, you can find these great places that don't need to make you feel like they've earned your money by making you feel uncomfortable. They can earn your money by knowing what they're talking about and talking about it with you. So the first time I actually had any meal at Nomad, 4 or 5 years ago now, it was that chicken with that beer Garrett made. And it was awesome. And it was perfect. And these were guys pushing me, because I'm as likely to drink wine as beer with dinner. And they were pushing me towards the beer because it was the right thing. So before you're put off by that notion, there's plenty of places out there to find out what the place is really going to be like when you're in the seat. And these places are great because they're comfortable in the seat.
It's about guiding the guest to what they are going to end up wanting, I guess.
But you can also do it with cocktails, right? Leo's an old friend of mine because, 10 years ago, he was making drinks during the lunch shifts that used to exist at 11 Madison. And he was making his own tinctures. And I'm a geek, and I asked him what those were, and he said, they're tinctures I make for these cocktails. And I was like, you make your own tinctures? And that took us, literally, I went there 10 times for lunch just to talk to Leo.
Okay, why do you go, I know you go to 11 Madison Park, what separates good fine dining from just any other
restaurant? It's 100% service. A lot of people can cook a good meal. You can get super geeky and get into the progression of a tasting menu and how well thought out it is, A to B to C to D. That's all deep geeky stuff. But as far as going out to dinner, this is New York City. So I would say most of the world's best chefs are here. And they all do a great job. So what matters in the room is how the service is handled and what it is. My favorite story about that is, first time I ever had dinner or lunch at the bar at Gramercy Tavern, I was a PA in New York making $100 a day. It was restaurant week, so it was $19.99 for lunch. I went in, got off very well with the bartender, made the joke that I wanted to make one with my steak, literally just looking for a reaction. Without missing a beat, he said, I don't know what that is, but if you describe the flavors to me, I'm sure the chef can whip you something up just like it. And to me, that was so well read, so well handled, and so perfect that I was now comfortable in a room that I shouldn't have been in because I couldn't afford it and wasn't dressed for it. And every chance I got, that's how I ended up at 11 Madison. And now that those guys split off and now they're Nomad, that's why I'm friends with everybody there, because of that one bartender that one time.
And let's tell us, go way back. Let's tell us the duck and decoy story.
Oh, well, that's not that far back. That's actually the last meal I had with my father. Sorry to be heavy, but was that duck. And it left a very lasting impression on me. It's beautiful, and it's possibly the perfect course. And I take credit, and I think Daniel gives me credit for the fact that you can still get it on the bar menu, even though it's off the real menu and there's no bar menu anymore. But it's
so what you did
beautifully
was
roasted duck, and they do a 4-5 spice on it, which is honey, lavender, Szechuan peppercorns, coriander, and cumin. And then they pair it to a fruit. So in the winter, it was figs. Now, Belgian triples, because of candy sugar and special B, taste like figs. So we made an American triple for all those fig notes and then spiced it with those rubs, called it decoy. The bar serves it, and they, you know, I've had it. You've had it with me with the duck. What do you think? Does it pair well?
I think it's great. I mean, I like the name too. You know, well, duck and decoy.
That's not hard.
I like that it's beer. You know, and I drink a lot of wine too. But you know, I do like that you've talked so much about pairing food and beers. And for me, the time I went with you to 11 Madison Park was a real experience for me because I haven't really been in that setting as often.
But that's a great example of being comfortable in a room. I'm lucky enough to know them, but if you commit to them, they commit to you. We walked in that room in T-shirts, bombed after this show, and they gave us a table and fed us very well as if they'd planned to have a bunch of miscreants.
Were they nice to me?
They were very nice to see. Like I said.
Yes, they were.
They're fantastic. They were nice
to you. Tell you what, if you're visiting New York, you go to the Nomad. Where is the Nomad anyways?
Nomad's on 28th Street and Broadway.
Is there an address?
1170 Broadway.
You walk into that place, the Nomad. You walk into the door and say, oh, I heard about Alex, the manager on Beer Sessions Radio. They will rush you to the bar and give you like free cocktails, right? But they won't give you beer. So.
And that's a promise from Jimmy.
But that's why we're talking beer. One more thing
I'm
about
going
the
tonight.
Beer. You know, you have a beer program, and where are you going with it? Like, you know, will Augie come in and make a special beer for the Nomad? Or
not for a long time. I don't know how many times.
We're working on something new with Yeppe to do, you know, something that fits our food and something that fits our program and something that's going to be bright acid and taste good and go down easy. You know, so we're moving forward and we're trying to focus we have two menus. We have a beer menu for everyone. Then we have a reserve menu for someone who might want to get a little bit deeper. So we're just trying to focus everything and make sure that it makes sense with the food that we serve.
And let's go back. Back to your staff. The whole reason the show came out was that
right.
you took your staff to.
It was Maggie's idea.
How would you describe Bitter and Esters? Why don't you describe it, Alex? What is Bitter and Esters?
I'm curious to find out what you.
What is this place in Brooklyn?
Putting me on the spot. It's a homebrew store. But what's so amazing about it was, you know, I feel like servers in a restaurant can be so far from the process of making beer. And I think that when they get inside the process of making beer, they can understand the finished product a little bit better. So being able to walk into Bitter and Esters and handle all the grains and see, you know, the raw ingredients, that totally changes the game for them. So they can really, you know, it gives them vocabulary to help describe the finished product to the guest. And I think that was the biggest thing, that they could handle the grains and handle the hops and see how everything works. And that was like, it's invaluable.
That's part of what we kind of teach. A lot of times when we're done teaching a class, I'll say, so next time you have a beer, say thank you to your brewmaster, because it's not, you know, it doesn't just come out of the taps. You know, it's something that people put a lot of love and a lot of work into, and it's so diverse. You guys had cranberries, right? It was a whole cranberry thing that they had a lot of fun with.
How did you decide to make that beer?
How did I decide to make the brown beer?
The beer that you made with Alex.
I didn't.
Who decided on that beer?
We had a meeting, and we tossed out a couple ideas, and we wanted to make something that was seasonal and made sense and you know, also fit the style of beer that we have on the list, even though it wasn't going to make it to the menu. And we wanted to do a brown ale with a little bit of acid to it, and that would be food friendly.
What was the name of it?
It was called Sock Full of Cranberries.
Sock Full of Cranberries, yeah. Because we put the cranberries into a muslin bag. Yeah,
makes sense. And John, you know, you're brewing beer yourself as well as a home brewer.
Yeah.
You came to New York City Brewers Choice.
Yep.
What are some styles of beer or recipes that you would call like your own, that you would say, come to my house and I want you to try my beer?
I have one right here, Jimmy, as a matter of fact.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This is a porter. Well,
I thought this was the Carton Beer Show.
Well, no, we have another beer.
What is it we're drinking right now, by the way?
What is this one? This one's called Gorp. So if you have a peanut allergy, stop drinking.
Oh, no.
This is Good Old Raisins and Peanuts Trail Mix. It's just a porter that we put peanuts and raisins and chocolate into and try to go for, you know, so sometimes anybody that cooks or drinks or eats, nostalgia's part of it, and nothing puts you more in a nostalgic space than aromatics. So basically the idea was, when I was a kid going for hikes and eating trail mix and coming home and having a kind of an anchor porter or something like that, and kind of that whole feeling at the end of those flavors, and we wanted to recreate those in a beer.
It actually works really well.
Thank you.
I get it.
So it's literally peanuts, raisins, and chocolate and a porter. And it's another one of our beers that upsets half the world, because it's not a shandy that tastes exactly like peanut butter and chocolate and raisins, but more
it's
aromatically.
Good. Thank you. The nose right away is nice. And John, why don't you dissect this beer?
I taste the peanuts. It tastes like a trail mix at the end. Yeah, it's a porter, and I knew right away it was a porter. What yeast did you use on this?
Actually, with this one, we used Chico.
Chico,
we wanted to be clean and out of the way.
Right. I brought a porter as well.
Right on.
But I used a Belgian Ardennes to give it a little bit of a Belgian thing, but I used black pepper. And so it's a black pepper porter. So you can really taste the black pepper at the end. So that's something that I would do.
John, you know, we've had you on so many times, and everyone in this room is a great guest, but you're in particular one of my favorite guests.
Oh, thank you, Jimmy.
And we were talking earlier before the show about, you know, brewing versus educator. But I think you've really found your niche as a beer educator and what you're doing at Bitters and Esters.
You know, I love people.
Is it Bitter and Esters or Bitters and Esters?
Bitter and Esters, okay. Yeah. It's one bitter, two Esters.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I love people. You know, I love the community that happens around beer. Beer is really a communal thing, and I haven't had a person ever come in pissed off because they were going to make beer. You know, God damn it, I got to make a beer today. Everyone's always in a good mood, and it's just kind of the way life should be, is like having a good time. We've had great things happen, if I may mention. Last time I was here, it was with Marcus from Rockaway Brewing.
It was
and,
our New York City Beer Week preview show, yeah.
And after the show, Marcus said, hey, you know, I got a 5-barrel fermenter open if you guys want to brew a beer, which is a great thing for homebrewers. Like, whoa. So we have this homebrew club that happened because of our store. They're called the Bruminaries. And I said, hey, Bruminaries, you know, I have this 5-barrel fermenter. Let's do a beer. So they did a rye pale ale. We all went in, did this rye pale ale with Mosaic and Galaxy, and we called it Rise of the Bruminaries because they're brand new. So that's going to actually be available in about 2 weeks.
Sounds like
some
kind of weird rock and roll band or something.
Rise of the Bruminaries.
Yep.
So that's going to be awesome. Yeah, it's all community-based for us, you know.
I'll remind you, the first beer we drank was called Hot Pun. Rise of the Bruminaries.
Awesome. Yeah. But John, I just want to give you a big shout out that you're really you are a great beer educator, and you know that that's a whole new role, and there's not too many out there. So let's make a toast to John Lapolia.
Oh gosh. Bitter,
if you're coming to New York City, so how do people find out about your beer classes?
Bitterandesters.com is where they can find out about it. We have beginning and advanced classes. We are always trying to do different events. We just had Michael Tonsmere. Who's the mad fermentationist. He wrote the American Sour book. He was just here on Saturday. He was a great guy. He's an educator, too, so that was really cool just hanging out with him.
But if someone's coming to New York City, they would one thing that they might want to go to. Everyone wants to go to Other Half Tasting Room.
They should.
Of course, they want to go to Jimmy's Number 43. Now they want to go to the Nomad.
And they should.
But they should sign up for one of your classes.
They absolutely should sign up for one of our classes. Again, it's online, Bitterness.
Our buddy Garen Backer, he's one of our great regular listeners in England. He's coming to New York, and he's going to get married. I'm giving him a shout out because he's a great guy. He was caring about Jimmy's Number 43, but he's coming to New York to get married in New York City, even though he's from England. And he's the kind of guy.
Other Half Tasting Room? That's awesome.
Yeah, right. And he should come over and take some of your classes.
You can just drop by, and I'll give him some beer. I'll give him some samples.
Can you also schedule a brew day with you? Like, is it always classes? Or you said you brew on premises.
Oh, no, we're
like,
brew on premises. So, yeah, you can definitely schedule a day. It's 15 gallons. We just had a couple who brewed 45 gallons for their wedding. So that's a really neat thing. They did three different beers. They made a Pilsner, an IPA, and a stout. So it was really cool.
Good. Right on.
And then, Alex, I still want to know, like, some anecdotes and, like, meat. What happened when you and your staff went to make beer? I mean,
it was, you know,
did you get stuck cleaning equipment for 2 hours? Or?
No, actually.
Oh, no, we do all the cleaning. we do all the crappy parts. Yeah.
When I went to your class,
I may start brewing there right away.
No grain out, that stuff.
Yeah, we do a half barrel system. You just have to do it every day, 10 times a day. Yeah.
We got to do all the fun stuff. You know, Maggie got there and did all the hard work with John early. I got there like a little bit later, and then the team showed up, and, you know, John taught them all about the raw ingredients and the different styles and what it takes to make different styles. And, you know, at the end, I think they walked away with a better understanding of how beer works. And what was really, really impactful for me, and I think for a lot of the team, is that they got to be a part of this thing. They decided what kind of beer we were going to make. They named it. They brewed it. And then we served it at our holiday party for our staff. And we got to drink it and share it with the rest of 500, 600 people and say, hey, we made this. It was really cool.
Yeah, I love getting an empty keg back. Yeah, it was pretty
It was
cool.
Very empty.
Right, well, let's make a toast to you guys. This is a very cool group, and I don't know what we're going to talk about next. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
All right. Hey, hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm wondering, Jack, who is that like kind of, is that called a riff or is that called like a electronic music?
I don't know. It's like a beat.
That was a beat. Okay.
Yeah.
I like that beat. Is that just your beat or somebody's?
His name is Rec Tech.
Well, I'll tell you, Jack Inslee, anytime you want to know about cool music, you check out Jack Inslee, our ultimate engineer. And you're like the executive
producer.
Everything for Heritage Radio Network. And going way back over 5 years now, without Jack, there'd be no Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks,
so cheers to Jack Inslee, bro. All right, so we're drinking beer. We're at that point where we're about to say, hey, where should we go? Should we go with Augie to 11 Madison Park, or should we go with Alex to the Nomad? Is this like a competition or something?
It's the same thing. You know it's the same group.
And not at all a competition. I think when I first started coming up with the reserve menu and our extended beer list of the Nomad, I asked Kirk Kellaway probably 5 million questions about where we wanted to go. And we definitely planned the Nomad menu to be complimentary of the 11 Madison
Park.
Yeah,
no, it's menu. Like I'm telling you, there's a great symbiosis, and it's a short walk. More than once, I've felt like I was cheating on EMP bar staff with the Nomad bar staff, and quickly ran down across the park.
So let's get back to brass tacks and all that stuff. So, Augie, you're the Carton Brewing.
That's me.
And let's say you want to sell beer at the Nomad. I know you have reps and all these things, but
no. So,
I mean, I am interested though. How a brewery would sell to a fine dining restaurant.
Well, for me, it's funny, right? So if I was going to walk into that place, I probably would bring RBDG or talk about making something. Their menu does a good job of being everywhere, so there's going to be no one beer necessarily that does it, except for maybe the Belgians.
You would actually talk to them about making like a custom beer?
Well, I would talk to any great chef about making a custom beer, but that's just the way I approach things. But there's kind of two kinds of beer, just like there's two kinds of wine in my brain. There's your cocktails and your food pairing. At the bar, you want a cocktail beer, right? You want a big IPA or a big stout or something pretty that tastes great in a glass and doesn't much care about whether it's with food or not. And that's fun to drink with the guys. But when you sit down in the dining room, you want something that isn't going to run over the food and is going to play along. And what's funnest about the style of Chef Hume's menu at Nomad is, for me, there's always the one thing sticking out in the dish that's his touch on it. It's always something born of sense. And then he's done something that makes it his own. Like, your choices of syrup for the beer you were talking about, the Nomad Ways, to me, it was clearly Hume's program, right? Like, you could just smell them all
That's
over.
Cool, but how about this? Let's jump. The chicken dish. Okay, Alex, tell us about the chicken dish, and then Augie, what beer would you make to go with the chicken dish? Let's do something different. Alex,
I already made a beer to go with the chicken dish.
What is the chicken dish? Tell us again.
Because
I'm starving.
Whole roasted chicken, stuffed with foie gras, truffles, and brioche. And then it's served with smoked lentils, cotechino sausage, and Brussels sprouts.
And maybe, is there some like broth from that chicken, or is it kind of dry and crisp chicken?
It's a roast.
It's roasted, so there's no broth that goes along with it, but the lentils are picked up.
That's too bad.
And the lentils are picked
like
up
the
and smoked
in
butter
the
and chicken
and
stock.
Okay, so you got this chicken, and then what beer, or did you, or would
well,
you
I
make?
Already
to
made, so we made, this, or at Thanksgiving this year, we put 2 kilos of white truffles into a Belgian triple. And obviously the Belgian triple is rich enough to handle the richness of the truffle. The brioche truffle butter thing that's under the skin of that chicken is about as rich as you're ever going to get on a chicken dish. And then so the triple would stand up to that and complement it. You know, when you're pairing, you're either complimenting or contrasting.
But if you didn't have a truffle beer, what other beer would you... John, what would
that
you
sounds,
make to
that
go
That sounds
with?
Expensive, truffle beer.
Let's say
I'm
I don't
in it
want,
for the art.
If I don't want truffles in my beer, What other beer would go with a truffle?
Well, then I'm not drinking with you.
I've been vegetarian since 1992. So it's hard for me to tell.
Why are you telling us that now?
You knew that. You've made me special vegetarian food before.
Should we apologize?
No, I don't give a damn.
So what would you make with what beer with vegetarian chicken?
Truffle studded tofurkey.
I had vegetarian chicken actually last night. It's kind of funny. And I had a saison with it. I had a Hill Farmstead saison.
Okay. So Augie, one more chance. Next year for the chicken dish at Nomad, without truffles, What other type of beer would you make?
I would still do a Belgian triple. I just take the truffles out. Like it's a dish about richness. You're never going to get an acidity level in a beer that's tolerable that's going to counter it. So you might as well just embrace it. I would go with something big, rich, sits there. May even intentionally diacetyl it just to put some butter next to how rich that dish is. But that would, you know, maybe you herb it with some thyme or something, but I don't think I'd go for that.
What I love about you is you're taking us back to basics and basic styles, and you know what? Belgian triples over the years is always one of my favorite styles, and I feel like with the current state of American craft beer, I feel like I have neglected that. And who wants to talk about that? Because I love Belgian triples.
Yeah, so do I. Yeah, it's not the easiest style to make. I mean, it's a matter of time. Really, with triples to get it right, to get the balance right, and it's a fairly easy recipe, right? The recipe's pretty easy, but the actual getting the triple to have the flavor, the balance that you want.
Can you make a Belgian style triple at your brewery?
Yeah,
of course you can. Yeah,
and what is it? Is it is there extra time involved?
No, it's the American thing versus the European thing, right? And it's, again, not to lean on wine metaphor, but it's the same thing, right? When Americans make a wine, they make this slutty bomb Cabernet that smells like cedar and pencil, and it's really easy to love, and it's rich and warm and boozy, and we're in that phase of our beer making. We want to make these big, impressive, fun, easy-to-love things that show things off, and they're great fun to drink when you're drinking beer. If you're in a series of tastings, each one's bigger than the one before, and you can taste that way. When you're sitting down at a table, you don't want your beer to run over your food, or at least I don't. So that's when you go to the traditional Europeans, because they have that kind of integrity and humbleness in their flavors. And I find they tend to put, you know, and the guys that are Great Classics, Great Lakes makes a bunch of food-friendly beers just because that's what they make. And you can do it, and we do
Great Lakes
it.
In Ohio?
Yeah.
Wow.
They make all those. But
when do you get to try Great Lakes beers?
Dude, I own a brewery. There's nothing that doesn't walk in my door. I'm super lucky. It's amazing what I get to drink. One of the reasons to open a brewery if you're a geek is the things people just say, hey, have you had this?
You can do that with a homebrew shop as well.
I was at a lot of homebrews too. This winter.
Really?
I was out there this winter, yeah.
And Alex, talking about Belgian triples, do you have any Belgian triples on the list?
Triple Carmelie.
Yeah, great.
The Belgian triple.
Mm-hmm. So how do we determine which triples we like? I remember when I first opened, we had Chimay on draft, which was the triple.
Right.
And then I tried some of the Shelton Brothers imports, which were, you know, I don't know, I can't remember anymore.
St. Bernardus is my favorite triple.
And some have candied sugar and some don't. But this is a great, we should have a whole show about Belgian triples, because for me, it was, when people talk about these gateway beers, when I started drinking Belgian triples, I was like, this is better than crack.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what Orval categorizes as, but Orval's that gateway drug to all the Belgian flavors, right? You get an Orval and you're like, oh, let's see what else this world does.
I guess I would consider that a Belgian pale, because it's the gateway.
But that's what I said. It just opens up all those phenolics for you that get happy when you start finding them.
I think what's one of the things that has struck me recently about Belgian beer is when you look at a Belgian double, where the roasted characteristics of the malt meet with roasted characteristics of beef, duck, pig. The caramelization matches
vegetables.
Up completely. Vegetables. Sorry.
Hard roasted. Funny. Beef, duck, pig. You know,
roasted
whatever.
Hard.
John, it's okay, dude.
I know.
You know, I eat vegetables too. You know.
Hey, the new Dirt Candy opened up just down the street from me.
Oh, really?
Can't wait to go. Yeah.
All right, I haven't been to Dirt Candy yet.
But Belgian triples, definitely. Like our listeners, check it out at @beer_sessions. You know, tweet your favorite Belgian triple or American style triple. So there's I've had Allagash triple,
which is fantastic.
That's great. Yeah. And then
but that's
on the
also
West Coast,
classic European style
right.
triple.
But you've got Green Flash doing Lafrique, which is kind of a IPA triple hybrid.
It's very malty.
It is malty.
Yeah, it's. I mean, that falls into right into their style of beers.
That's a Green Flash triple.
Yeah.
But then I wonder why, like, Omegang, which has, like, their Abbey, which is a double, I don't really think they have a triple style. And I guess because I'm going back now looking at the whatever my history of beer. For me, at one time, you know, a good Belgian triple to me represented what the best beer style was in the world.
Really?
But at the time,
it probably was, yeah. Right? You've been doing this a long time.
I mean, 9 years ago, maybe the Belgian triple was the best beer in the world.
Delirium Tremens.
Yeah. I mean, well, you know as well as I do. But again, so it's funny. But the discussion we're having right now is food pairing, right? Like, to be completely honest, I tend not to like the Belgian phenolics in beers. Like, in a cocktail, like as a cocktail, as a glass of beer to drink with you guys, they get tired on me quick by the bottom of a glass. But with some food, adding or pulling or teasing those phenolics, those aromas, I'm very happy with it. And the discussion is, what do you pair with food? And more often than not, because with Americans, I think you got to know each guy and his footprint. Whereas with the Europeans, you can rely on a style. Not only Belgian triples, and all the Germans. Like, you know that the Doppelbock's going to be something like this every time you get it. And therefore, even if blind food pairing, it's an easier way to go.
I think where I'm going with just is that I'm also suggesting that I've had so many great American beers, but now I'm like, oh, there's a great old European styles. And I just was with the brewmaster from Rodenbach recently, cool. And tasting Flemish Reds. And again, you're right, it's no food pairings. Deal. Let's jump to Flemish Reds.
But we've done that. You and I have done Rodenbach together. And the thing about Rodenbach is, so for people that want to understand the concept of umami, I don't know of a beer that represents umami better than Rodenbach's. Right? They just have that richness feeling, that protein, that umami sensation.
Makes life good. Yeah.
Not only that, I mean, it's umami, but it also has all of the acid notes that you need to match any, like, vinaigrette or anything like that. So for someone like coming from Chef Hume's cooking, it's each dish has, like, you know, the entrees have a caramelization, and then there's an acidic component to it.
Yep.
So Rodenbach not only matches the caramelization in meat or vegetable.
That's okay.
But the acid hits all of the pickled components too, so it's working on every single level as a complementary pairing.
On the note of vegetarian, the other night I was at a dinner with a friend who's really a great, great cook, and she had this cauliflower kind of baked dish, but the key ingredient was the bacon fat. So that's another thing. But this has been a great show. We talked about a lot of things, but I do think that I love the American craft brewers, and I think that let's start going back to some of these classic European styles as well.
They're the ones that really made beer.
There's so many great styles of beer. Do you teach specific style classes at Bitter and Esther's?
That's a good idea, Jimmy. I should do that.
You don't do that?
So many styles.
What are your classes, man? Just beer 101?
It's
like white people make beer? Come on.
Just all the different ingredients and how to use them. You know, it's up to you. Styles are what we say are styles. So
I would lay down a different challenge. I would challenge all Americans to keep creating and keep trying to make bigger, better things. And I would challenge all our importers to just get us better, fresher examples of what Europe has to offer. They're great at what they do. They don't need us copying them. They need us doing what we do, which is pushing boundaries and figuring out new stuff. When a guy comes to me and asks me, how do I brew, what do I read, I give him Colicchio's Think Like a Chef. Because I think the introduction to that book starts you on what your job is, to think about flavors and what they mean to you and how to organize them the way you wish they were. And that's the job of an American brewer, organizing these tools as those flavors to end up where you want your beer to be. It's not to recreate something somebody did 500 years ago because the king didn't want them to have wheat.
Have you had any of the Moody Tongue beers?
No.
I'd just be curious to see what your take on them would be.
Where is that from? Dude?
Moody Tongue is made by Jared Rubin coming out of Chicago, and he's worked in kitchens all over the place, more notably Per Se, but he was a cook, and he's approaching beer making from that specific focus, and he makes some really interesting stuff.
Alex, last question. How does someone get to be a server at the Nomad?
Send me an email.
No, that's it, really. I mean, are you always looking for people? What background do they need to have?
I think, I mean, you know, we're always looking for people, and we take the same approach to hiring as 11 Madison Park. So if you work in the industry and you want to learn more and you want to learn a new system, you start as a food runner and see what we're all about. And we're always looking for good people. So
I would bet you it's a very hard job. Just me.
you know, it's hard.
You got to deal with people like me and Jimmy after this show.
Talk about it. But again, still, I'm going to push you guys. I expect more from your beer program. So let's work on it. And I bet if there's two brewers that you haven't worked with yet on a custom Nomad beer, who would they be? Putting you on the spot.
Augie.
Nice.
And Firestone.
All right. Cool. Good stuff.
Yeah, they're good.
Hey, in closing, I'd like to thank our sponsors at Union Beer Distributors who helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to Augie, John, and Alex for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Maggie Seiden and Justin Kennedy, and our engineer impresario, Jack Inslee. Thanks for listening. See you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All
thank
right.
You. Thank you, Jimmy.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.